I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubig of the New York Daily News, and welcome to the Monday morning edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We thank you, as always, for joining us. We look forward to some Mondays more than others when something big has happened in sports the day before, and something big happened in sports yesterday. The final round of the 2018 Masters, won by Patrick Reed, who stood in there on the back nine yesterday against an amazing charge by Jordan Spieth, against a then later charge from Ricky Fowler. If you've ever been to Augusta, that two-putt that Patrick Reed had on the 18th hole, where he stands and where that cup was, you feel that if you hit the putt too hard, the ball will roll all the way to Atlanta, Georgia. He got it down there. He knocked it in. He ends up at 15 under par. He had taken out Rory McIlroy on a day when he was trying to become the sixth player to win all four majors early. And it started early for McIlroy and may have started after Saturday's round, when he tried to convince people that all the pressure was on Patrick Reed, and then he played that way. But what is interesting to me, guys, about this tournament, and again, all props to Patrick Reed, who established himself as a big guy in sports, this tournament was even more interesting because of the guy who finished third than the guy who won. Because if Jordan Spieth had somehow figured out a way to finish this off, it would have stood in there with what Jack Nicklaus did at a much older age in 1986.
Yeah, I believe you always have to give credit to the person who won. And in an era of Tiger Woods where people are talking about a guy who hasn't won in 10 years all the time over the people who win, I don't want to be guilty of doing that right here. So first, even though I agree with you, Michael, hats off to Patrick Reed. There are two ways to win a golf tournament. One is you come from behind and catch somebody. The other is you hold somebody off. And he held... he held everybody off.
Never lost the lead.
Yep. Steady for a guy who looks like Flounder from Animal House and apparently behaves like, what's his name, Bluto from Animal House. This is a guy who was the most mature on the day. In the end, he did not let the pressure get to him. Started at 13, ended at 15, and just held off everybody. Did you get the feeling like it was watching a guy run down a football field with a straight arm the entire time, and guys were kept trying to get at him, and sometimes they got close and sometimes he straight armed them off? Having said all that, I totally agree with you. I was so rooting for Spieth to get to 18 and do something amazing there and then put the heat on him, and he just hit that tree branch on his tee shot and everything changed, and he actually finished third.
You know, Reed looks more like a guy who just won the member guest, you know. I'm going to predict, America, that Mike's going to hate when I say this, but I'm going to say it. And that is that when things like this happen, I think it's a terrible advertisement for golf. It's why I rooted desperately against Tom Watson a couple of years ago at the Open. Because when old people or pudgy people succeed over flat-bellied people, it only gives ammunition to the people who don't understand why this game is so fiendish and so wonderful. And it's the game that all the flat-bellied
Bob, you're acting
athletes,
like he's well, a
I'm not
sumo
finished.
Well, you're acting like
all
he's
the
a
flat-bellied
sumo wrestler.
Athletes in the other sports wish they could play to the and admire these golfers, all the baseball players, basketball players, football players, hockey players. They all admire these guys, and they get what is so tough about this game. But it is not good for the game when a guy who looks like Patrick Reed with the fleshy face and the belly beats out these other guys. I'm sorry, but
why?
He does.
Why does that matter? Why does that matter?
It matters because then it gives ammunition to the people who downgrade golf as a activity, and it's not a sport. I'm just saying, it just drives me crazy.
But do they say that about fat relief pitchers? Do they say
you.
That about
Thank
fat
you.
Offensive linemen?
Do they say
linemen?
It about Rick Rushel? Do they say it about Greg Maddux? Do they say it about, by the way, the two guys from Muscle Beach, the fielders, father and son? Come
hey,
on,
don't
Bob.
Yell at me. I'm not the one that says this.
You just
I'm
said
a,
it.
I'm a golf defender. But it's hard to defend when a guy who looks like Patrick Reed beats a guy who looks like
Bob.
Reed.
This is such a sidebar to the sports event that we I'm all done watched with it. Yesterday.
I had my say. Now you can go back to what you want.
Go back to the way that he putted the ball, which was I don't care if you look like Godzilla. The way that Patrick Reed putted the ball on Saturday, especially, and on Sunday, just enough to survive, given the pressure that was on him, given the fact that what was his history, a second place finish, that was the biggest thing on his resume coming in here in the biggest pressure tournament in the world. I don't care what he looks like. I don't care how much fat he's got over hanging over his waist. That was impressive golf when it needed to be played.
Let's get to another guy right away, and that is, are we now about to declare Ricky Fowler as the occupant of the famous best player never to have won a major?
Oh, I think he was already after all the top 10 finishes and all the second place finishes in the Masters. Absolutely. But before we get to Patrick Reed, okay, and I'm telling you, the birdie on number 12, okay, which he knows what's happening ahead of him with Spieth. And what was really interesting to me, and my wife was watching this with me, I was saying some guys look at the scoreboard and some guys don't. And it's fascinating. Jordan Spieth said he did not look at the scoreboard till after he had putted out on 18. Patrick knew where everybody was all day long, but the birdie putt on 12 was huge. The birdie putt on 14 was huge. And I thought way early in the round, the birdie on 3 after McIlroy missed the eagle on 2 was important. But here's the thing. Jordan Spieth was within a limb and a couple of putts that burned the edge away from shooting 62 yesterday and playing himself at least into a final. It would have been one of the great stories in the history of golf. And, you know, the one time I could ever only remember one time that would have been comparable. Gary Player 40 years ago shot 64 on Sunday, started the day with 12 guys ahead of him and ended up winning the Masters. But Jordan, and again, guys, Mitch and I talked about this on Friday. This event yesterday was for all the people who act as if no angel will ever again get their wings if Tiger Woods doesn't compete in a golf tournament. This was all that's good about the sport yesterday without him and without Phil.
Look how many guys in their 20s, some of them in their younger 20s, were dominating this course. And I thought the exact same thing. Tiger Woods was showered before any of the real activity that mattered yesterday took place. And if there are people listening who think, well, I only watch golf when Tiger Woods is playing, then that's your loss, because this was phenomenal golf. Tiger Woods didn't even belong in this universe over the weekend. And it wasn't even close. And this was great performances by guys who were going to be around for the next 10 to 15 years at the top of this game.
And, you know, there was a point in time, not all that long ago, maybe between 10 to 15, when there was a complete dearth of competition for Tiger among the 20s of that time. I call it the lost Charles Howell generation.
Yep.
And there was nobody, and his competition were people like David Duval briefly, and then Vijay Singh briefly, and so forth. Then, of course, Phil was able to win a single major. But the point being that this 20-something of that group, who are now 35 and up, they blew it. This generation, but I'll say this, yeah, you're right, they're here and they're great and I love them, and I've been screaming this for years, that got to wean yourself off the Tiger drug, and people haven't still, obviously, but these guys are not facing, you know, that Tiger of old. You know,
I want to mention something else that indirectly about Reed, and that is that he's playing with Rory McIlroy the whole day. Now, Rory McIlroy looked like a pit bull when the round started. Mike, you noted that he made the comment, hey, all the pressure's on Patrick Reed. You know, he's never done anything before. And he's standing next to him, you know, a foot away from him the whole time, teeing off next to him. McIlroy, who everyone has along with Spieth and, you know, one or two others, has basically ordained as the future of golf. And here's chubby Patrick Reed. And the whole day, he's holding him off. He wins the psychological battle with him. And Mike, you know this about golf. It's one of those rare sports, because you can't think about too many other sports. Like something happens in the first quarter and they never get over it. Something happens in the second inning and they never get over it. But with Rory McIlroy failing on that eagle opportunity on 2,
Yeah.
As weird as that sounds, boy, I failed to get an eagle. That actually changed his whole day. He looked like a guy who was in a hurry to get off the green after that. And that's the beauty of golf, is that what plays with your head is what could have been. And here he is on the second hole. He has a chance. He has a chance to tie Reed and really put the pressure on him. Don't you think the tournament could have been different if suddenly Reed is playing alongside a guy who's tied with him? He can't ignore that part of the scoreboard. And instead, McIlroy, I thought, was as much of a story as Spieth was in the opposite direction. He ends up down in you know, what was it, about ninth place in a tournament where I thought he was going to win.
You know, it's funny. Rory ended up in a tie for fifth with Stenson and Watson and an Australian kid.
Yeah, but not amongst nine players, right?
Yeah, but here's my thing about Rory. And one of the reasons why I was hoping he would win, it's funny, Smith was my pick going in. Here's why I wanted him to win. I don't want this Augusta thing to become a thing. I do want him to get the career Grand Slam. And Mitch, it started before the putt on two, believe me. Brandel Chamblee said this on the Golf Channel later. That drive that Rory hit on one might have been as bad a drive as I've ever seen in those circumstances from a great player. He's lucky the ball didn't go out of bounds. And any golfer will tell you, your nervous miss is wide right. Okay, I can go back on the 18th hole with Tom Kite when he had a chance to catch Nicholas, wide right. Norman, wide right. Wide right is the miss when pressure gets to you and grabs you by the throat. It started there with Rory McIlroy, and then he misses the putt on two. But again, look back at this tournament and why it was such a great drama, and on the day when we feel like the country goes to a golf tournament. Patrick Reed's ball, maybe because of wet grass, doesn't roll back into the water. John Rahm hits one into the water, okay? They end up only three strokes apart. And if somehow, Jordan Spieth is able to make a birdie on 18, well, you know what would have happened, okay? He clips a branch. It wasn't a wild drive. He hit a fade, and he hit it too close to those trees on the left side. And Bob's been there. So, Bob, you know how narrow that chute is on the 18th hole, okay? Where they're all trying to end up short of that bunkers up on the left side. That was another thing that was so great yesterday. And by the way, we cannot go too far into this discussion. If you want to know why Jordan Spieth is cool and worth rooting for and is going to be around and is probably going to win 10 or 12 majors, how about his reaction when he was dry on number 12? Okay, turning to the crowd after everything that happened a few years ago, putting his arms up in the air and then making the putt. That's why Jordan Spieth is cool.
Hey, I got Pat, why would people have doubted Reed's ability to withstand the pressure after all the conversation pre-yesterday about Hazeltine and what he had done? So that mystified me. I appreciated what Rory was trying to do, but why anybody bought it
The Masters is different than the Ryder.
I know, but Mitch, it's not. All I'm saying is, no, it's not a major championship. This young man has won five times on the PGA Tour. But when you've been in the barrel and the Ryder Cup, and he didn't just beat some guy, he beat Rory at Hazeltine the way he did. There's got to be some muscle memory from having beaten him. I think it ended up one up that day at Hazeltine. And this, you know, we talked about him the other day. He was knocking on the door, this guy. Not necessarily in majors, but he is a talented player. And by the way, Patrick, if somebody ever alerts you to this podcast, they're calling you Pudgy, not me.
Well, is he built to win other tournaments?
Yes.
I mean, you know,
sure.
These guys who sometimes are just there at the Masters and nothing else.
Mitch, I love the way he thought his way around the golf course. He didn't change his game plan yesterday. And again, he only shot 71 yesterday. But you know what? Bob, you know what Patrick Reed did? And they talk about this all the time in baseball. He pitched to the scoreboard.
Okay. Good. Yeah. By the way, a couple subplots. Do you notice how Tony Finau finished up yesterday?
Yeah. Yep. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah. And he was the first story of the tournament was Tony Finau and his celebration and his popping his own ankle back in and then going out and shooting a great round the first day. But keep your I've had my eye on this guy.
He's so talented.
About
3 years
now, really. Two years anyway. Really fascinated by him, and I'm really rooting for him to break through someday. But it was a wonderful tournament for him, and he finished up, he shot 67 yesterday, right? He had a good final round anyway.
Well, I'm staring at the whole scorecard, the leaderboard, and how many guys made massive moves. You know, Finau is one of them, and obviously Fowler plowed his way through towards the end, and Spieth is just a chapter to himself. By the way, I love this guy, John Rahm. I don't know what's going to happen to him.
Oh, he's 23,
boy,
Mitch. He's 23.
23. And didn't show, lost his temper a couple of times, but boy, can he make shots. But all of this says to me, look at how much was out there on that golf course. Look at how many shots were out there, if you could make them, to gain, and then look at Tiger Woods all over the weekend, and then tell me how he's all the way back. All right, this at least at the end, thankfully, and we need to talk about Tiger Woods because you can't talk about golf without it. At least by the last day, he was off the course before any of this stuff mattered. But even until then, there were still people out there saying, so he can make a move on this. When you hold him up against what everybody else was doing, he almost wasn't in the same golf tournament.
Mitch, you know what? I said this on Twitter yesterday. Bobby, I said this on Twitter. Didn't you start to get the idea that television was going to cover him into the courtesy car and all the way to the airport? They're putting his clubs on the plane now. The hatch has come down. I believe he's going up the steps now. And here's the other thing. They bought into this narrative. I'm trying to finish even par. Like if finishing even par wasn't going to get him a green jacket, it was going to get him a green windbreaker. Okay. And so but they bought into that thing that this was somehow a thing. If he could get back to even par.
This is the same guy who was a favorite. Betting favorite going into the tournament, and now he just wants to do par, and he's going to go out victorious.
It's so true. I really thought the wheels up. I think Tiger is leaving Augusta now. While birdies are being made, I said to somebody yesterday, "Oh, I'm glad I got to see Tiger's birdie putt on 17." I'm sorry, guys are trying to win the golf course behind him. Win the golf tournament.
Only 15 strokes behind, that's all, of all these people who are younger than him. And I said it on Friday, but it bears repeating. These people who want to see Tiger Woods return to glory, just remember, you do not get to bring the field, as Bob, you so rightly pointed out. You don't get to bring that back, too. You don't get to bring the field 10, 12 years ago back. You can bring Tiger's skills back if they're still there, and he defies age, and he'll be 43 the next time he plays the Masters. Fine, if he can somehow find some of those skills back, but he's going to find those skills matched up against Jordan Spieth and Bubba Watson and Rory McIlroy and now Patrick Reed and John Rahm and all the rest. None of them are afraid of him. None of them. They don't rumble with fear. All those guys are out of the game already. And so now he says he's going to take time off. I mean, look at the narrative as it's changed. He's bringing all this momentum from these three or four golf tournaments that he played before. Wow, he's a favorite now to win the Masters. And by Sunday, he goes, I've got to take time off now and regroup and get back to the gym and go work on myself or whatever. It's like watching two different novels being written, and now what happens to him? I mean, he just disappears for a while, and then it becomes another comeback story?
Mitch, here's what's interesting about Tiger, and I know he says this was his schedule for the year and how he always takes time off after the Masters. Okay, everybody keeps saying, remember, it's only six tournaments. Okay, so he needs reps. I mean, good luck to him. Listen, my favorite golf course in the world, and the great golf course that I play the most is Shinnecock Hills. Okay, good luck for him there at the U.S. Open if he's not hitting his irons and driving it straighter than he does. He acted like he drove the ball pretty straight this week, and he was I forget where he was in driving accuracy. No, this... Mitch, we talked about this the other day. I think this story is going to be like Brigadoon. I'm not saying he's not going to contend again. He may contend again in a major. But you saw how this golf course and this event just ground him down and showed the weaknesses that are in his game in a game that once had no weaknesses.
Mike, if I'm not mistaken, I was reading yesterday during the day that he and Phil were the two worst guys in terms of hitting the fairway.
Yeah.
He and Phil.
Oh, my God. And these kids drive it a million miles, and they drive it straight, okay? And then they make everything they look at, and then they go play the next week. I'm going to do a parting shot about this the other day. These kids are coming over the hill now like the first army in waves. It wasn't like this. I'm not saying Tiger wouldn't have won. He's been a wonder, a force of nature when he was young. But this sport that he dominated, it's changed.
Hey, Mike, you haven't even mentioned that Tiger was able to tie Hao Tong Li at 289.
And let's go back to Ricky. Just one more thing about Ricky Fowler, okay? And he is popular around the world and in this country for a reason. That birdie he made on the 72nd hole, where that flag traditionally is, they move it around a little bit, but where that flag is, hardly anybody birdie. You know, Phil did it to win, and others have done it to win. He made Patrick Reed make a par. He talked with great pride about this. You know, he made Patrick make a par to win the tournament. That was the last cool part of the last chapter of the Masters.
And he stood there waiting to greet him at the end, which was a class move. Today's episode of the Sports Reporters is also brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Hey, there's a new boss in town at Buffalo Wild Wings, and he deals in bacon. It's the Bacon Boss Burger.
Oh, I love
bacon.
Oh, bacon's so good.
The Bacon Boss Burger featuring bacon three different ways. I didn't know there were that many ways to make bacon. And a blanket of wine cheese sauce. And bacon's joined by other new favorites like the smothered cheese steak quesadilla, sweet chili shrimp, and Alaska cod classic. All paired perfectly with a Sam 76, a fruity ale with the crisp finish of a lager. Hurry in today. Try them all before they're gone at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly. Let's shift gears over to the national pastime of sorts. That would be the baseball game. And we talked about Shohei Ohtani on Friday, and I thought, okay, we've dealt with him, and, you know, we'll probably bring him up again in a couple of weeks. But I'm sorry, we have to bring him up
because
he has now, I probably saw the statistics, since they were playing the A's in both games that he pitched, he has technically pitched a perfect game because he retired 27 A's in succession. It just took over two starts. But he's actually retired 27 A's in succession after blasting the ball at the plate. He comes out and dabbles with the perfect game.
Yep.
And we are seeing a sea change in baseball with this guy. And there are young kids right now, 9 and 10 years old, who are thinking 3 days hitting, day off, pitch, 3 days hitting, day off, pitch. It's changing the mold.
Bob, I said to Mitch the other day, as we were talking about the young man that I now call the Shohei kid, okay, and this is, he's turned the big leagues into little league. The best player is always your best pitcher, and he's turned the whole
pitcher
thing.
And a shortstop back cleanup in a little league.
All right, Bobby, let me ask you this, okay, because I was amazed at how quickly people jumped on him because of a sketchy spring training, as if he's the first guy to ever have a sketchy spring training, and then I kept remembering how much teams like the New York Yankees were willing to move heaven and earth to get him, and if they had gotten him, they would have never gotten Stanton. Bobby Valentine believes this. I know people disagree with this. I'm not saying the next guy is going to be as good as Ohtani is and is gifted and all that stuff, okay? I think this is going to be a gateway to us seeing more of this going forward.
Do you really?
Yes.
I'd like to think so, but I'm a little hesitant to think that. I just think, as the Brits say, this might be a one-off, and he is just a unique commodity and a unique star, and we should embrace him. But if it leads to more of that, fine with me. That's good. I like to see pitchers who can hit. It's why Sabathia has been in the wrong league now for 10 years, you know, and because he can hit. But no, know that, Mike. You know.
I know.
And, you know, anyway, this is.
I'm surprised you didn't call him Bob.
This is beyond anything that you could have predicted or imagined or hoped for. If you're them, and obviously it's a microcosmic, minuscule sampling. But oh my God! By the way, among other things he's done, he's rousted the good people of Southern California. They had the largest day crowd ever yesterday.
Well, would you not go out to see him now? I mean, isn't he a must see if you're going to buy one
baseball
ticket?
I wonder. You know. Oh, this is and you know. Yeah, it's good. We still don't know. He's
going to be
exactly
a show on the road, too. I mean, he's going to be a show on the people. He's one of these sea change kind of guys that people actually look to see. When is he pitching? Can I get a ticket to that one if he's coming to town? If he's from out of town, if you're living in Southern California, you start scheduling your ticket buys around him. And yet you get to see him in between. He's pitched 13 innings and struck out 18 batters. And has clobbered the ball at the plate. And, yeah, I don't know if it's going to go on or not. I mentioned on Friday that the other thing that he has to deal with that Americans don't is the Japanese press corps, which will be following him around. Oh. Literally, you know what this is like, Bob. We all do. You know, yeah, we've covered this. It's a different thing than American. As bad as the American press is, when the press conference is over or the locker room's over, they go up and write their stories. The Japanese guys just hang around. You know, they're following him back to his hotel. They're following. They're asking him about breakfast and dinner, and it's just sort of a different media swarm. It's 24 hours a day. And how you deal with that, as well as the pressure and all the other things, that's what I'm going to watch over the long haul. This has to be fatiguing for him. He's going to turn 24 in a couple of months. He's not 18. He's not 19. Yeah. So you don't worry about him like, well, is he going to blow his arm out throwing 100 miles an hour all the time? Obviously, he's got this power. He's been doing it for a while. And that's what makes him interesting. And I don't agree with the one-off thing, Bob, and here's why. It depends on how you train for this. There are a lot of great athletes. We bemoan this in the States. There are a lot of great athletes who don't go into baseball, American athletes, because they might be a great pitcher, but it's not enough for them or whatever. So they go into football or they go into – but the chance to sort of be both, I think, will attract – kids who right now are passing up on baseball because it just doesn't hold that thing. And when you start to get kids who begin to train in this mode, because as you say, they all are born that the young 8 and 9 year olds are already doing this. They're already playing shortstop and pitching. They're already hitting home runs and pitching. If they're sort of encouraged to continue to do that, as opposed to that moment that comes, which we all know, where the high school coach says you got to pick one or the other. If that moment doesn't come, we're going to develop future Shohei Ohtanis.
You know how tradition-bound baseball people are, even at that level. So we'll see. But it would be wonderful. If it's great. What a byproduct that would be. But meanwhile, I'm prepared to enjoy now, him for himself.
Here's the thing. What he's done just so far is historic. I'm looking at some of the stuff today. Ohtani's 12 strikeouts tied the American League record for a pitcher in one of his first two career games on the mound. This is a guy adapting to a new country and a new sport. And by the way, Bob, I'm surprised you didn't refer to CC Sabathia as Patrick Reed lookalike CC Sabathia when you were talking about him before.
Chubby.
Okay,
we're using the word chubby.
You know what? You guys. By the way, in the modern world, you guys are attempting to fat shame the new Masters champion. So you.
What's with this "you guys" stuff?
I didn't do it.
Amigo.
You guys. You raised. You.
I didn't say anything.
You called him Pudgy Pat Reed.
It's Mr. Ryan. Now let me ask. I'm blessed to be on a podcast with a Bostonian and a New Yorker. Or at least by the
you don't mean
they
that.
Write
you
for.
Don't really mean that. You
well,
mean
yes, that. I do. And so let me ask you each a question, Michael, about Giancarlo Stanton, who was supposed to be, you know, the second coming of Aaron Judge, or vice versa, and instead, not only, I mean, he's whiffing at a historic rate. Meanwhile, the Boston Red Sox have won 5 one-run games against the same team, have won 6 games against that one same team, and are off to like the best start nearly in history for an AL East team. So tell me about these situations in Boston.
Well, what was ironic about yesterday, Mitch, was the Yankees lost 8-7 in a game in which they led by 5 runs after the first inning, and the Red Sox won 8-7 in a game in which they were trailing by 5 runs in the 8th inning. And by the way, the Red Sox did to the Rays yesterday what the Rays did to them on opening day, for the Red Sox only lost. They hit them for 6 in the 8th inning. Obviously, this was early. Mitch, before you got on today, I was telling Mr. Ryan that I've contacted Major League Baseball, and the Red Sox will not be allowed to only play teams from the state of Florida for the rest of the season. Hence the series coming up with the Yankees on Tuesday night, where it will be Chris Sale against the strikeout Mash Brothers, okay? Twice in the same week, Giancarlo Stanton struck out 5 times in a game. And I think we talked, Mitch, I think we talked about this, and Bobby, a couple weeks ago, when he said at the end of spring training, I'm ready for New York. No, he wasn't. Nobody is. He's played out his career in private in Miami, okay? And I'm not saying this is going to continue. He's too talented for it to continue. And I can tell you guys from Tino Martinez on who were awful when they first got to New York. But here's what's interesting about the Yankees to me. Yankee fans loved that team last year. They loved that team. They loved the surprise of it all. And then they go get Stanton, and they're back to being the evil empire in the eyes of baseball fans outside of New York City. Guys, this is going to be an interesting dynamic going forward, especially if they scuffle more than just the first couple of weeks of the season.
Now, up here on the far northeast quadrant of America, where the Red Sox are 8-1, much to our amazement. And yes, we do start with the idea that, as it is in business, location, location, location. In sports, it's often schedule, 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 as Mike has properly alluded.
Right.
And they have played all their games against Tampa Bay and Miami.
They're state champions, Bob. They are state champions of Florida.
Thank you,
I think they are.
Very good. What has characterized this is the fact that yesterday Eduardo Rodriguez was the first Red Sox starting pitcher of the season not to have thrown anything, a game that you would call a good to exemplary. They survived him throwing 92 pitches in 3 2/3 innings and came back to win the game. So they have had outstanding starting pitching, a starting rotation ERA hovering around 1 prior to yesterday. That's how they got here. They had not been officially charged with an error yet, although yesterday there were 3 examples of the lie of statistics, and that there were 3 plays made, 2 by J.D. Martinez, 1 by Xander Bogaerts, that were not errors, but they were bad defensive plays that hurt them at the time. So that's neither here nor there. They haven't yet hit to any large degree, and the one guy who was hitting very well was Bogaerts, who had a bizarre injury in which he took a bad throw from Martinez as a cutoff and tried to flip it to who he thought Rafael Devers, the third baseman, was there, but Devers was not there. He flipped it to nobody. He then chased the ball down toward the dugout, knowing that if it goes in the dugout, the runner would advance, and he slid into the dugout, thereby injuring his left ankle, and the ball never did go in the dugout, so he leaves the game. We don't know what his status is. Meanwhile, they get to the eighth. They give up runs in 6 consecutive innings. Their pitcher gives up a run until 5 innings, 1 run, the 6th inning, 2 runs, and as Mike said, they're trailing by 5 runs in the 8th, and they get 6 consecutive 2-out hits.
I know. I watched
6
it. It's crazy.
Consecutive 2-out hits to win this game, and the last hit being a catchable ball to the left center field scoreboard that should have been caught and it wasn't, and it's a double for Benintendi, and they win the game. This is when you know you're going well, because that's a game we sat, by the way, it was 38 degrees at game time, and we sat there and shivered. And this is when you're saying, watching this go on, that, oh, and by the way, did I mention that Tampa Bay had gotten 3 infield hits and a check swing double, and in their first 92 swings, pitchers against Rodriguez had 2 good swings. One of them was a home run by Kron.
Mitch, Bob was at the game yesterday. Can you tell?
Yeah, I can tell, by the way.
So anyway, this is all
next
the
vagaries.
Next
I'm going to get how much mustard
baseball
was on the hot dog.
The vagaries
we are
of
in
baseball.
The first week here, and we are in the first week.
How about the second place Detroit Tigers, Mitch? How about your second place Detroit Tigers, a half game out of first place behind the Minnesota Twins?
And a whopping 4-4. Okay, let me know when 500 makes a news story. I am interested, though, as someone who grew up in the East and in Philadelphia, of all places, so I know about fans quickly turning on a team. But has lived his life in the Midwest, where it's absolutely the opposite. If we had Giancarlo Stanton on the Tigers, as bad as he has been, as much as he has struck out, as bad as the Tigers are, you would not hear a boo before August. So my question is, like, how fast in New York do you get booed. He's got 1 week in.
They booed him at the home opener. Now it was cold and wet. Okay, so they were cranky, even though their team was, oh, by the way, winning the game. And yes, they booed him for the first time, and he was fine. And he said, you know, that I the way I play today, I deserve it. Blah blah blah. And yes, it's why. The two teams that play this week in Fenway Park, Bob knows this, it's just different there. I'm not saying it's more special or anything else. The pressures of playing on these two teams are just different. And you know, I always use that expression, in the barrel, okay? You don't know what it's like to be in the barrel in those two cities. And guess what? One frame of reference is a guy who will start one of these games for the Red Sox this week. And he pitched in Detroit, Mitch, was David Price, who couldn't have had a rockier first season in Boston.
By the way, Mitch, J.D. Martinez, when he struck out with the bases loaded in the fifth, in between two fielding gaffes, was in fact booed. So welcome to the club.
So I'm glad to know all of our former players are getting the same treatment.
Yeah, nice
to know that. Okay, Michael, you want to move us on here?
Oh yeah, but before we move to and Bobby, we'll get to this in a second. But Mitch and I talking about this on Friday. It is fascinating how the end of the regular season in the NBA has once again grabbed you by the front of your shirt and captured our attention. Okay, today's episode of the Sports Reporters is brought to you by Mattress Firm. Mitch, you listen up here, okay?
Everyone
knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further at Mattress Firm, so shop at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. Not that you know this so much right now in Detroit, but it's a true home run. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they're more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, go to mattressfirm.com to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial, which, Mitch, I actually thought was going to be the first of 4 months of the Tiger season, to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com and use code PODCAST15 for 15% off. The code is only valid through April 10th, so don't miss out. Get right on this. Get the play-by-play and how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow only at Mattress Firm. Bob, trust the process in Philadelphia, where the Philadelphia 76ers, since the All-Star game, have the second best record in the sport after the Houston Rockets. Robert, I will put it to you this way. Is there any chance that the Sixers, who have done this in a completely, not unexpected way, but a completely wonderfully surprising way, can make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Other than the idea that there is no collective unit experience, obviously in the playoffs, collective, and I'm looking at the nor is there a whole lot of individual experience among the key players on the starting lineup. But there is some other than I'm not sure how much Redick's even had, frankly. Why not? And God, by the way, guess what they've gotten? A little boost from a first-round draft pick. The first pick in the draft has made significant contributions. Had 8 points yesterday. 4 for 8. He had a very good game. I know he's starting to be. He got 21 minutes. He's earning his minutes. So they have more depth. And let's give credit to the brass, because they picked up two guys who are every night are giving them the double figures off the bench, Ilyasova and Bellinelli.
Yep.
Yes, the answer is why not? If I'm a Boston fan, I'm going to have to brace them for the idea that the Sixers could go farther than the Celtics.
You know, I'm looking at their record over the last few years. My math is not that great, but I'm going to tell you that from 2013 to last year,
sure,
I've added this three times now. So that's the 2013, 14, 15, and 16 seasons. That's four straight seasons.
Sure.
They won a total of 75 games.
Yeah.
The Golden State Warriors almost won that much in a single season.
Right.
Okay, in 4 years, they had 1 year where they won 19, 1 year where they won 18, 1 year where they won 10, and then the whopping 28 that tilts the average last year, and now they're over, we're going to be over 50. We've talked about it before. I hate the way that they did it, tanking and constantly going for high draft picks. I hate it. But the result is a team that's young and coming and doesn't know any better. And, Bob, if Embiid comes back from this eye injury, I see no reason why he shouldn't. No. And they bring this sort of like, what do we got to lose? We won 2 years ago, we won 10 games. What do we got to lose? I like their chances to pull off some kind of upset in the East. I mean, in the end, I don't know how this thing's going to shake out because the standings, the way that they are so close. You know, one game here or there still over the next few days could determine who plays who and in which round. But really, there's only one question, obviously, in the East. Can you beat Cleveland?
Yep.
If they go up against Cleveland with a devil-may-care attitude and a healthy roster, how many games did they get off them?
Well, Mitch, you have identified two. Mitch, you have identified the problem. I was talking about this with Zach Lupica yesterday, okay? He said it still comes down to one thing in the playoffs. For all of the issues the Cavaliers have had this year, can you get four games off of LeBron? I do not believe they can get four games off of LeBron. And by the way, I still think the Cavaliers want to finish third and pass the Sixers. There's only two games left. Now, the Sixers have Dallas and Milwaukee. And the Cavaliers, if you think that they might be looking at a soft place to land at the end of their regular season, they get the Knicks twice. But can you get four games off of LeBron James? I do not believe the Philadelphia 76ers can do that. I don't believe the Toronto Raptors can do that. I don't believe the Boston Celtics, as presently constituted, can do that.
I can pretty much guarantee you the Celtics are not in really viable part of this discussion given their physical state. They've had a remarkable year to transcend the Hayward injury and other things that have happened to them over the year. But this is, you know, they're not. I have a lot more faith that Philly can do something and make some noise in the playoffs than Boston.
And of course, nobody's talking about a 58-win team right now in Toronto.
They better be.
I mean, better they be?
I say this as someone who has been saying that, hey, you got no excuse, guys. The pressure's on you to put up or shut up, Toronto. This is it. They're there. If they're fully healthy, and they should be, then this is it.
Court. You got the record. Yep. You did everything.
Did you say better they be?
He said they better be, and I'm saying I'm just taking his words and spinning them around. Better they be. By the way, last note on Philadelphia. They got the same coach who coached them to 10 wins and 19 wins and 28 wins and all the rest of it, and now he's being hailed as like this brilliant coach, Brett Brown. And, you know, they could have dumped him in the middle of all those tanking seasons. And it's very interesting that when you stick with a coach for a while and you give him enough talent to work with, suddenly he's a brilliant coach. You know, suddenly what an amazing coaching job he's doing. But how many teams would have stuck with the same coach just to appease their fans? Oh, wow, we won 19 games. We won 10 games. We need to change the coach.
And clearly, he was in on the deal. I thought about this. And I'm happy for this guy, not just because he's from Maine and went to Boston University. We can discuss that later. But the fact is that
let's not.
Yes,
or not.
Clearly,
yeah.
He was allowed to stay because they knew they were never going to hold him accountable for their
right.
plan.
Right.
And as long as he proved to them whatever they were looking for from him in the midst of the tanking, they saw and got it, and now he gets to reap the benefits. It is extremely unusual, Mitch. I couldn't agree with you more that it's highly unusual, but boy, it's good. I'm happy for this guy that he was able to do this, and now it can enjoy the benefits. Yeah.
All right, let's switch to the Western Conference for a second. Then I want to ask you guys a question about LeBron, okay? How concerned are you about the defending champions of the National Basketball Association because of Steph Curry's status, because they are currently 4-5 without Steph Curry? They're going to end up nearly 10 games behind the Rockets for the regular season. And Bob, I talked about this the other day. I think if I'm LeBron, as great as the Rockets have been, I actually think the Cavaliers match up better with the Rockets than they do the Warriors.
I still... I'm a holdout, and you go, the biggest contingency is the health. It's nothing else to me. I still like their core four over to Houston if they're healthy, period. I like their core four and to beat Houston, and I want to see Houston do it when it matters against them, and I'm going to hold out now. But that's just totally contingent on Curry being at least 90% of what he needs to be. And if he's not, then okay. Then Houston probably can beat them. But damn it, I'm not picking Houston over them if we think that they're reasonably healthy.
Well, let's do it a little earlier than that. First round, which is where Curry is liable to be, you know, he's not – right now they're saying he's not going to play, right? First round? I think that's still the prediction.
Yeah, right.
Okay, they could draw right at the standings right now, San Antonio or Oklahoma City. Now, I know San Antonio and Oklahoma City
Or New Orleans.
All right. They're not the teams that they used to be, but they do have some muscle memory on those teams. And they do have some guys who know what it's like. Is not their most dangerous step, maybe not going to be if they go up against Houston, but in that first round when they're still coming off, you know, if Curry comes back at all, he's going to be rusty. And their defense right now is not, you know, Kerr said it himself, it's not what they're used to, and they, you know, they pride themselves on that too, and they got a week to get it together, and now they're facing San Antonio, Oklahoma City, or New Orleans. Don't you think the first step is actually more dangerous than the third? But
Mitch, I'm telling you something. And again, when you look at the standings in the Western Conference, you can throw a blanket over teams, you know, 4 through 8. The Utah Jazz right now are in the fourth slot at 47-33. The Minnesota Timberwolves are 45-35 with 2 games left in the regular season. I know that they have been up and down and all over the place, and Carmelo, once again, that poor lost soul has maybe ended up in the wrong city. Okay. I don't want to play. If I'm the Warriors, I want no part of the Oklahoma City Thunder, Mitch and Bob, in the first round. No part of them.
Yeah. That's my point.
My word of choice for the Warriors, Mitch, is vulnerable. Of course, vulnerable in that first round, and that West. I think didn't we see Anthony Davis? I was going to use a naughty word. Have a very big game against them lately. Yes, absolutely, they're vulnerable. And Oklahoma City, who knows? There's no question that they're vulnerable in that first round. And I didn't mean to imply that they wouldn't have a lot of problems getting to play Houston. I'm just saying. I think they can beat Houston healthy, but without Curry, they're vulnerable.
And Mitch, don't you think it is so interesting as we enter the playoffs, and a couple of weeks ago, they were life and death to not make the playoffs. And the way the Denver Nuggets, they have the same record as the T-Wolves right now, and they're right now kind of technically on the outside looking in. Isn't it interesting that the San Antonio Spurs are like the Joker in the deck here? Nobody's going to know what to expect from when the playoffs start.
Well, you know what their coach is like. And
Aldridge is having a tremendous season and a tremendous second half of the season. Misgivings.
And
last
it makes
year.
The Kawhi Leonard thing all the more weird, troubling, mysterious. You know, what the heck has happened?
I just came from a long siege in San Antonio and reading those papers every day and picking up on it. And it is a bizarre thing. I mean, no one knows. You know, they always knew he was private and reclusive, and you thought he was the perfect Spur. He was the perfect heir to the Duncan legacy because of that, as well as his skill. But you can read that the players don't. I don't say they don't care, but they are written him off. He's not part of the deal at the moment in their minds at all. They've moved on.
Going to be a great first round in the NBA.
All right, here's the question I wanted to ask you before we get to parting shot, and I think this is interesting. I was watching my friend Mike Greenberg's new show today, and they were talking about, you know, Scottie Pippen made some comments about LeBron and Michael. Okay, and Scottie Pippen, by the way, I'm in the minority on this, ought to wake up whistling every single day that he played basketball with Michael Jordan, because that's why he's one of the 50 best players of all time. Bob, I will throw this to you, but Mitch, I want to know what you thought, okay? LeBron James has a chance this year to play in his 8th straight NBA final with 2 teams, okay? Which I believe is as great an accomplishment as Michael's 6 NBA titles. Bob, here's my question for you. Did Michael ever one time with the Bulls play a team as good in the finals as the Warriors of the last 3 years have been? The answer is no.
No, the answer is no. No. I'm not even close. in the context of
their
time.
Utah Jazz, the Seattle, you know, on and on. A Laker team on the
Phoenix,
back nine.
With Phoenix and
Mitch,
question.
What do you? I'm telling you,
Lakers
this,
without
this is not yet. To diminish Michael. Okay, he never had to play a team in the finals as good as the one LeBron has gone toe to toe with three straight years in the finals.
Let me remember. So they beats the Lakers, he beats Portland, he beats Phoenix. The first three were Utah, three completely different teams, right? Seattle 1 year.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and, so it's not
Utah.
Right. He's not going up, and then the Jazz twice.
Yes.
I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So yeah, he's not going up against legacy teams, because I had to think back on that.
Yeah.
And he's not going up. And look, the Golden State Warriors are one of the greatest teams ever assembled.
Yep.
So, but that's also, Michael, part of the reason that he's been to the finals as many times as he has and hasn't won like Michael Jordan's clip. Michael Jordan went to the finals. He won in the finals, never lost.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is the burden for LeBron. LeBron's going to have to play 2 to 3 times as many NBA finals to get as many rings as Michael Jordan. And that's exactly the reason. Because he's not as good as Jordan, but because he's up against much tougher teams in the West. This is why I've also always wondered, does LeBron James really want to be in the West during the course of his career?
Right.
Because, you know, it ain't so easy to get there as it is from these. At least he keeps showing up. He's like a TV show that gets renewed every year, you know, and then we just hope for the best ratings. But he's always going to get renewed because he's always in the finals. But that's a really good point. It is a really good point when you do the Michael Jordan, LeBron James thing. Take into account who those two guys have had to face in the finals. All right, before we get to our parting shots, let me tell you about another one of our sponsors, Freshly. Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. So even if you get stuck at work late, you can still come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. Yes, I said a chef. No more worrying about having to figure out what you have left in the fridge, especially no mess to clean up afterwards, because Freshly chefs source the finest all-natural ingredients they can find and work with nutritionists to ensure that their meals are as healthy as possible and as delicious as possible. That would be like the steak peppercorn, the Southwest chicken bowl, slow-cooked beef chili. How about peach balsamic pork chop? My particular view on food is if the word balsamic appears in it, it is high-end. That's just a rule that I have. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are also super healthy. You can customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing, rotating menu of more than 30 chef-crafted options, and there's no weekly commitment, so only get deliveries when you want them. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chef and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners, plus free shipping. Here's how you do it. You go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters and be relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's Freshly.com/sportsreporters. It tastes better when you put the /sportsreporters on it for $25 off your first order. Time for our parting shots, and Mike Lupica leads us off.
There really were, and if you listen to this podcast today, you know, there were so many dramatic and compelling and just generally cool things that happened yesterday at Augusta, so many of which we did discuss. But in a tournament where everybody was so obsessed with the chances of a couple of old guys coming in, Phil Mickelson and well, you know who, it occurred to me about halfway through the festivities that the only names on the first page of the leaderboard included golfers in their 20s. And when it was over, the top four finishers were in their 20s. Reed, Fowler, Spieth, Rahm. And oh, by the way, that kid from Australia, Cameron Smith, finished in a tie for fifth. He's got a name to remember in golf too, even if it is Smith. There is a depth of exciting young talent in this sport that now rivals the amazing depth of young talent all over baseball right now. I say all the time that seeing sports through the eyes of my three sons helps me see modern sports way more clearly. But the thing my kids have taught me most is playing out right now in professional golf. The good old days are now.
Bob Ryan.
Listen up, youngins. The 76ers are back. What do I mean back? Well, if you're 30, maybe 35 or younger, all you know is that they always stink until now. But you should know that there was a time when the Sixers were feared. They won a championship in 83, and they averaged 57 wins a year in a 9-year period ending in 1985-86. 57. Anyway, Sam Hinkie was right. The process worked. They have won 14 straight, are 50-30, and are ahead of the Cavs. And you know what my favorite part of this is? It's their best player, Ben Simmons. Last night, there were 439 three-point field goal attempts in the seven NBA games, including Philly's. You know how many of them were by Ben Simmons? Mike? Mitch?
No. How many?
Zero!
Oh!
You know how many three-pointers he's attempted this season?
Mike? How many?
Mitch?
How many? One.
Tell me, Bob. Tell me I'm one. Uncle Bob.
One, and it was probably at the end of the half. You know how many triple-doubles he's had? 36.
Lots.
So,
wow.
What's my point? Well, they say you can't survive in this league without a three-pointer. Ben Simmons can.
Mm-hmm. We don't talk a ton of hockey on this podcast. Although hockey is a major sport, it always feels a bit minor held up to football, baseball, and basketball. But living in Detroit, a stone's throw from Canada, I can tell you that hockey is a unique world, a good world, and never better than when it pulls together after a tragedy. Such is the case right now in Saskatchewan, the kind of province that's usually the butt of late-night TV jokes. There, Sunday night, everyone from the Prime Minister of Canada to Don Cherry gathered at an arena in Humboldt to stand vigil for a junior hockey team. That's right, a junior hockey team, 15 of whose members or staff were killed when the team bus collided with a truck. 14 others were injured. At the vigil, a ring of flowers was placed at center ice. Images of the deceased lined the stage. O Canada was sung. Amazing Grace was sung. The arena was packed hours before the ceremony started, and they had to use a curling rink and a high school gym for the overflow. This for a town that has a population of around 6,000 people. Canada and hockey is one of the great sports love affairs, but when you love that much, your heart breaks that much. $4 million were raised in less than 2 days to help heal this junior program by Canadians. We don't talk a lot about hockey, but there are reasons, reasons like this one, that we should. That's going to wrap things up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We'll be back on Friday. We do this podcast every Monday and Friday. There's going to be a lot to talk about come Friday. The NBA playoffs will be set up. The NHL playoffs will be in swing. And who knows? Giancarlo Stanton may have struck out 10 more times. So there'll be much more to talk about. We are grateful for your being here. And if you care to leave us a comment, we enjoy reading those as well. Until we see you on Friday, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.